Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. Ask Me Anything episode where I take questions for those of you that are members. If you want to be able to ask me a question, you have to become a member. It's members.charliekirk.com. Every Friday we do this and then we air it on Monday. So it's members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com. Email me as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with the most important organization in the country at tpusa.com. We talk about big issues here, including being addicted to pornography. We talk about how important fathers are, how you should get involved in local politics, and more. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com, and subscribe to our podcast. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. We take your questions this hour for those of you that are members, only those of you that are members, members.charliekirk.com. I'm going to make one exception. I don't know if this young lady is a member or not, but her question was so sincere. I'm not going to say her name on air, but she gave me permission to talk about this on air because it was a very important question. So become members.charliekirk.com. If you guys want to join, and also I'm wearing my Kirk's hot sauce shirt. Have you ever tried Kirk's hot sauce?
I have.
It's not bad, right?
It's all right.
See, I got an all. You know what we should put on the website? It's all right, Blake Neff.
And that's like the top rating.
It's the top rating.
Have me do movie reviews, and it's just like that tops out right there.
That's right. Very important question. It's a deep question here. I'm going to just read it as I received it and wrote it, and then we'll riff on it. Hi, Charlie. I'm 22 years old. I've been married to my husband for a year and a half. Tonight, he told me he has struggled with pornography since he was a little kid. I never knew. He told me he has quit and has done for about a month and a half. My question is, where should my mind be? The biggest hurt is that he kept it from me, and I honestly don't know how. What steps should I take to trust him and not hurt him better and not hurt him? Do I tell him it's hard to trust him? Please, please, any advice would be so appreciated. I'm definitely at a loss for words at the time, please, and thank you. I could tell, I got this email late last night, that it was probably not a good night for this individual, and she was looking for help. So I said, hi there, first of all, it's okay to feel hurt, but this is not personal towards you. I know that sounds weird, but him viewing pornography is not about you or your marriage. This is about him dealing with a serious pattern of sexual sin that so many men have battled with, myself included. If young men start viewing porn between ages 14 to 16, it creates neuroassociations in the brain that are very hard to break later in life, but not impossible. I direct her to yourbrainonporn.com. The website is amazing. So is the book. So please read it. It's by Dr. Wilson, Dr. Gary Wilson. He's passed away, and he's actually was non-religious, but was a crusader against pornography, and he believed it was a societal toxin. So I said, let me answer these questions the best I can. Number one, it's okay to be hurt because viewing porn within a marriage is a sin, but it is not adultery. He did not cheat on you. He just wasn't the best husband he should have been to you. As a man, as men, we know what we're doing is wrong, and we live in shame for our failures. The shame can cause a cycle of sin, and we're afraid to tell the ones we love. That is why he kept it from you, not because he was hiding something, but because he was ashamed of it. Number two, you have to understand how hard it is for men to overcome this. It's like overcoming an opioid or alcohol addiction for some. It can take time, and it isn't easy, but victory is worth it. I will send resources below that I highly recommend reading and studying. Number three, you need to love on your husband and thank him for telling you. So many husbands keep this from their wives for years. Yes, he sinned, but him telling you is a big deal and deserve praise and thanks. Number four, you need to open up daily communication with this. He will struggle with this for a while. Shaking a porn addiction rarely ever heals overnight. There is backsliding and constant temptation. It is a process to heal. You need to know that you need to know this and that it's your role as a wife to help him heal like he's trying to defeat cancer, even a virus. Number five, I highly recommend he starts using an accountability browser like Covenant Eyes. By the way, you guys can get 30 days free at covenanteyes.com/Charlie. And finally, I link to a book called At the Altar of Sexual Idolatry. I say, this is a tough road, but stay close to God and involve your husband with how you feel about this. Give him another chance. Express the hurt, but don't turn him away. This is an epidemic in our country impacting tens of millions of young men. You have a great husband who had the courage to tell you and wants to fix it. I hope this helps. Thanks so much. Blake, do you have anything to add?
I don't really have much to add. Okay. That's a really good answer.
Oh, thanks. And, yeah, I wrote that. Yeah. I'm not as good of a writer as Blake, but that was good. But anyway, I kind of summarized my thoughts there, but I just hope everyone understands this is a widespread thing. It's not something that needs to be normalized in the sense of like, oh, it's okay if you struggle with, meaning like, oh, it's okay if you watch porn, but in the sense that there should be widespread compassion for men that are trying to overcome this terrible addiction that so many people wrestle with. So with that, let's go to Kimberly. Kimberly will be our first question. All right, Kimberly, what is your question?
Hi, yeah. Thanks, Charlie. I am a state delegate for Colorado going to our state assembly next week, and I'm just wondering, like, what would you say, like maybe top five questions for me and the other delegates could be to determine, like, if a candidate is a rhino versus like a MAGA constitutional conservative Republican?
That's a great question. So that's your Colorado state GOP, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Excellent. So first, you have to trust your gut, your instinct. You'll be able to tell almost immediately just based on how they talk, how they walk. But some very, very basic questions, which especially in Colorado, you need to ask them how they feel about this transgender stuff. If they kind of dance...
Colorado's really wild on that.
That's
now.
Why. I mean, yeah, if they kind of dance around on the transgender thing, they're a moderate rhino and they won't fight on it. But if they say, hey, this trans thing is, you know, a poison, it is a tumor on society that needs to be removed... So on and so forth. You can ask about election integrity. I think that's important, especially in Colorado, because there's like no signature verification. I would also ask about marijuana, because I personally don't think marijuana should be legal. I think Colorado is a perfect example why it shouldn't be legal. But I hope that helps a little bit. But you'll be able to tell if they kind of waffle and if they kind of go back and forth.
Talk a lot about wanting to like move on from this moment and get back to the base, like the business, the basics or something, if they have a lot of nostalgia for 2006, that's probably a good warning sign.
Yeah, and then also if they're kind of constantly talking just about business issues, then bad sign. Again, I'm very pro-business. I want to see business flourish.
It's a type.
Yes, exactly.
They want to talk about business because they don't want to talk about anything else.
And they're just financed by the business class, and they don't want to talk about the kind of social issues and all that. So let me ask you, have you been to one of these conventions before, or how long have you been involved? I'm just curious.
Yeah, I went 2 years ago. That was the first time I had gone as an alternate delegate. So I got to see the process. And, you know, ask some questions along with the other delegates. And it was interesting. It was just really hard to tell, like, in a couple of the races, you know, like, what, you know, just to trust what they were saying, you know, versus not. And, I asked as many questions as I could think. And I just did at our county assembly as well to a couple of them. But, yeah, so a couple years. I haven't been involved in it that long, but I'm a precinct chair person as well in Park County, Colorado. So,
well, God bless you. Thank you for being involved, and just trust your gut. I think you'll be able to figure it out pretty quick. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's get to a question here. We have a couple emailed questions as well. This one is here. Charlie, I loved the conversation with Aaron Friday. Are you going to be posting that? Love being a member. That nearly brought me to tears. Yes, we just had a conversation with Aaron Friday. We're going to isolate that into its own episode on the Charlie Kirk Show podcast page. That was powerful stuff, wasn't it, Blake?
It was.
A mom who never planned to be political. She was former New York Times liberal. Her daughter gets into the trans contagion. How widespread, you know the data really well, how widespread is this, Blake? How many kids are actually taking cross-sex hormones, testosterone therapy, puberty blockers?
The thing is, we don't know for sure.
That's why,
because there's no central database. It's not like homicides where we have a pretty good idea.
Go to the morgue.
Yeah. You know, how many people get, how many dead bodies are we
finding?
They're
going to censor that one day,
yeah.
Too.
And, oh man, they will. They already are. It's wild. But that's a whole separate thing. So the issue is, we don't seem to know, but we know there's a lot more of it than there was before, because, you know, you can look at the charts. There were two of these clinics 20 years ago. Now there's hundreds of them. You know, these things pop up like they're, you know, craft brew pubs in a white part of Brooklyn.
What a great And you know what? If Donald Trump were to win the presidency, the CDC and the FDA can demand this. They could do this without Congress.
We can do so many things.
Because this is data collection, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we want to know how many kids are currently taking, we don't want to know their names, we don't want to violate HIPAA, how many kids are currently taking cross-sex hormones in this country. By the way, we know how many people get whooping cough, how many people get the flu. I mean, we track that stuff with insane specificity. But this thing, they're intentionally not telling us. Why do you think that is?
It's just, well, part of it is all, it's so much magical thinking. So they definitely don't want any emphasis on how many people do this and then desist. We know that number is exploding anecdotally. And you could easily have predicted this. It was such an obvious fad when it blew up. And they would tell you this crap where they say the vast majority of people are fully happy with their transition and they stick with it. And, you know, maybe that was true 30 years ago when you had to be incredibly committed to this bit to be able to pull it off. But now you go in and say, well, sometimes I feel like a boy and you're a dude a day later.
Jeff, you are up. Thank you for being a member. What is on your mind?
Yeah, Charlie, thanks for taking my question. But Catholics are a huge voting bloc. Has TPUSA or TP Action or even maybe TP Faith reached out to FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students? Their Sikh gathering last January had 17,000 attendees, I understand. I believe it was down in San Diego.
Great question. Yes. So I first at TPUSA Faith, we have tried to reach out to a lot of different Catholic dioceses and priests and not very successfully. There's a lot of top-down control, as you well know, in the Catholic Church. I did speak at my first Catholic Church in LA. I'll think of the name. It was near Glendale, Simi Valley. It was terrific. So I spoke at my first Catholic church, and I have a ton of respect for Catholics. Now, as far as the Catholic universities are some of the most left-wing universities in the country. There are some exceptions, like Wyoming Catholic College.
Steubenville. Dallas, I think, is a good one.
Dominion or something in Virginia. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Old Dominion's a public
Not Old Dominion, no.
Yeah, they're probably, I can't remember off the top of my head.
It's one of our teammates at Turning Point went there. But yeah, Blake is Catholic. Do you have something to...
I think my brother, I haven't checked on his plans in the last few weeks, but I believe he's planning to do FOCUS. It's kind of, like you said, you can be a FOCUS missionary for, I believe,
FOCUS
a year or two.
That's right.
And so you do campus stuff. So that's, I don't know its exact relationship with the Catholic hierarchy, but... it probably would be a useful group to reach out to. My guess is the Catholic Church doesn't always like to get as openly political.
They don't.
And understandable, I think. There's been occasional bad incidents due to that in the past. So they might be wary of getting involved with, you know, we are very political in what we do. But I do think you'd find a lot of very sympathetic people within those organizations. So having some sort of dialogue with them, even if it maybe has to be through less political intermediaries, I think would be viable.
Yeah, the school is called Christendom.
Christendom. Oh, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's right, yeah.
The author, the old head of Christendom wrote a 5-volume history of Christendom. I think it got 6 volumes later. But,
of, like, actual Christendom.
Christendom, yeah. Like, view European history mostly, but Christian history, like, the idea was, let's take a view of history that is directly informed by this is the Christian world and what the Christian world is doing. He also really liked Marie Antoinette. It was kind of a funny quirk of his.
One of my great frustrations is how Catholics do not always vote their values, and how Catholics that are not as serious Catholics, they will vote Democrat, they will support abortion, they'll support the trans thing, including Joe Biden, who calls himself a Catholic. Thank you, Jeff, for being a member. Let's go to Caleb and Michelle. I just saw them recently in Lubbock, Texas, and they're terrific. Caleb, Michelle, how you doing?
Doing great, Charlie. Thank you so much for coming to Lubbock. That was a great event last night. Question. Michelle wants to ask the question this time. She says, how does your relationship with your father influence now how you are raising your daughter and how you understand fatherhood?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the best answer I can give is time. My dad always dedicated a ton of time to be there for me. Whatever I was interested in, sports, Boy Scouts, and that's the most important thing, is to try to carve out time to be present and really saying no to all sorts of different, you know, things that you might want to do. You know, okay, want to go out with your friends or whatever, and just say no to that and dedicate time to being a father and to being, you know, raising good kids.
Do they talk about this with Protestants? You hear it all the time in Catholic men's groups and the like, but as far as parents worry a lot about making sure their kids might, you know, stay in whatever faith they're growing up in, and it's essentially 100% the dad who decides whether this happens.
Wow.
If you have a family where two parents, we already have a two-parent household, and only the mom is practicing whatever the faith is, the children keep doing it at about 2 or 3%. The numbers are horrible.
Are you serious?
If both do it, it's still a bad number, like 30%. If two-parent household, only the dad practices, it's 70-some percent.
Are you serious?
And the theory is that if they're both doing it, a lot of the time the dad might not really care and is going along.
Yes,
and the kids can tell.
Passively,
the kids can tell. If only the dad's going, the dad cares. They take the cue from the dad.
Is the same work for politics?
That I don't know. But you hear about this. Every men's group will bring this up. Like, this is why you have to, you know, show this is important for your kids. They will take the cue from their dad.
Folks, so many people I know are disheartened that our country seems to have forgotten the importance of citizenship, and they wonder how a strong sense of citizenship might be revived. That's why my friends at Hillsdale College have produced a free online course on this topic, American Citizenship and Its Decline. Taught by historian Victor Davis Hanson, the course traces the history of citizenship and explains how it is undermined in America today by open borders, by identity politics, by the administrative state, and by globalization. Americans taking the course will gain a deeper insight about the connection between citizenship and freedom, an insight they can share with their family members, friends, and neighbors. Hillsdale's free online courses are an important component of Hillsdale's mission to reach and teach increasing millions of people on behalf of liberty and the American way of life. So sign up today for Hillsdale's free online course, American Citizenship and Its Decline, by visiting charlieforhillsdale.com. That is charlieforhillsdale.com. Start your free course today at charlieforhillsdale.com. Melinda, thank you for being a member. What's on your mind?
Hi, Charlie. I'm not sure if you're aware of the current dynamics in the Idaho GOP, but briefly, the old guard establishment is targeting the grassroots precinct committee women and men who successfully gained control of the party in 2022, electing a true conservative, Dorothy Moon, as head of the state GOP. So the old guard is now investing up to $2 million in dark money to run lobbyists and past politicians against the grassroots PCs this May to regain control of the party. So I'd like to empower at minimum our Ada County liberty-minded PC candidates in using your newly created app for the May primary, which will help us relationally organize and lay the foundation for strong get out the votes efforts in November. And if we don't succeed, Idaho's trajectory and fate is likely to be that of Colorado. My question, can you please share next steps for who to contact or information to access for me and any others on this call who are working hard to use your app and apply your effective get out the vote strategies for critical races in their jurisdictions?
Well, first of all, thank you for doing that and for being part of the team. So you're in a very important state. And something that I fully support getting involved in it might end up being a nasty Republican fight, and that is Idaho. So if you were in a state, for example, that was a 50-50 battleground state, let's just say Georgia, not the best use of time at this point, right? We have to, but right now in Idaho, the biggest problem you guys have in Idaho is that Republicans control everything and they act like Democrats. You know this, right? You know this very, very well. And so you have to keep the pressure on. Here's the rule. In internal party politics, who wants it more ends up winning. Who shows up more, who ends up being more active, who has more energy. And the establishment, they might have more money, but that does not mean that they are insurmountable or that there is any guarantee they're going to win. So I hope that's somewhat helpful. We'd love to have you stay engaged, stay involved. Any way we can help at Turning Point Action, we're happy to supply that. I will say our priority is understandably battleground states right now. I think you understand that. But I have a heart for Idaho. I visit Idaho 2 or 3 times a year. Maybe you've been to some of those events. I would love to return. And you right now, you need better U.S. senators. What a tragedy that Idaho, which is one of the most right-wing states in the country, you have basically two Mitt Romneys as U.S. senators. I'm sure you agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
So anyway, love to help you, love to stay engaged and involved, and God bless. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let's get to the next question here. We can get to an email question. Someone just emailed us as a member. They said, Blake, can you find the citation for that study?
I'm literally looking for it right now while you were doing that.
That's
Googling
hard to do
around.
To find things
found,
you remember. I try to do that all
I
the time.
I found a column on CatholicExchange.com in 2022 that's titled Kids Stay in Church If Dad Goes to Church by Mark Haas. And I think he's citing whatever that is from. I know there is a book I was talking about. It was a 1994 Swiss study that I think a lot of them like to cite for this. It was a bit lower than it was 2% if only mom goes. And then it was 33% if it's both. And if it was just that, it was 44%. So still higher, not as high as I was thinking. I know there was a book, I'm trying to find the book too, which looked at like 100 years of evidence and reached the same conclusion, which was it's very much the strong father bond, essentially, that really
regardless
cements.
If it's a son or a daughter.
Yes, exactly.
And the father leads the spiritual direction of the home.
Precisely.
And, especially if the father really believes in it and it's not passive.
Exactly. The father is what sets the tone of this is for real. This is what matters in this family. This is what our family cares about. And then I think it's a double thing where you need them to set that tone and to have a good relationship with the children, because we know plenty of cases where kids rebel against their dad. And sometimes this is societal poisons that might push them to do it. But there are probably cases where dad, unfortunately, botches the job of parenting in some way or another. Having kids is hard.
Yes, it is. And I think it's incredibly important. Let's just kind of distill this down. Blake, someone on campus said, you know, I asked how many blacks are raised by, you know, two-parent household, and it's 25%, 25 to 30%. And they said, well, what difference do dads make? There you go. By the way, also from likelihood to go to prison, likelihood to maintain a good job, you know, not commit crimes, all that sort of stuff. Having a father in the home is one of the highest predictors of a child's future.
It is. It really does matter, and you can't let them just conflict that out and say, oh, it's actually just a poverty thing. No, dads matter for real.
Okay, everybody, email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Become a member at members.charliekirk.com. That is members.charliekirk.com to ask us questions exclusively. Only members get to ask questions. Come. Okay, Rod is next, who is a member. Rod, thank you for being a member and for backing us. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Charlie.
Yes, Rod, how you doing?
Yeah, doing good. I'm in Michigan, and I'm just curious. We've been fighting in Michigan with tremendous excessive cheating, and every time someone stands up, the attorney general places a lawsuit on them. And as you know, the current situation with the electors, they're being, you know, attacked by the attorney general. How do we fight that in the state of Michigan?
There is no good answer to that, Rod. I wish I had a solution.
She's really bad.
She is.
She is like Dolores Umbridge witch lady, which I can say because I'm not in Michigan and she can't indict me.
Yes.
Yet.
I mean, just so Rod, I know you're fighting. I have a question for you, Rod. I haven't covered this in a while. What is the status of the alternate electors case where they were going after these senior citizens? She was the one. Her name's Dana Nessel. Is that right?
Dana Nessel.
That's
Dana
from
Nessel.
Memory. Dana Nessel.
Yes, and she's still going after him pretty strongly.
So yeah, she is a wicked human being, and she has now said
she looks like a character in Wicked.
Yes, and
we should just paint her green and call her Elphaba.
And she's in symmetry with other secretaries of states and attorneys general. So Rod, I guess my question for you: you're in the Michigan grassroots. Has it weakened the resolve to fight for election integrity in Michigan?
Yes, and I'll tell you, the last election, I had friends and myself, we went down to Detroit when all those issues were going on last time in the,
yes,
in the presidential election. And if you can remember what they did in those reports, they were actually putting up sheets and covering up what they were doing in downtown Detroit. And that got a lot of people like, what can we do? We're like at odds of what we can do to fight that type of that actions. And everybody that fought it, you know, was getting in trouble with the law. And it's like, are we going to really fight and get ourselves in that type of situation?
Well, look, there's no easy solution there, but the best thing I could say is I hope the RNC comes in soon, and I'm going to push Lara Trump to do this with legal support so that we could try to get some judgments, because there is a chilling effect, and you answered my question, Rod. They want to try to indict so many people that you're afraid to contest for election integrity. That's the point, is that they want to try to put so many people in jail, put so many people behind bars. And if there was an issue that fires me up the most, it is the criminalization of these alternate electors. Like, this was proven in American history to be fine to do. No one was trying to overthrow the government. It was only conditional that if there was a conclusive amount of evidence that the electors were there in 1960, an alternate slate of electors was used, and they go after these everyday patriots.
Yeah, I can go off on this.
Please,
if you want
go deep into it.
Look, like so you mentioned 1960. So
yes.
This is the only precedent we have before 2020 of what are we going to do in our current system if people are arguing about who won a state and, you know, we're getting close to the deadline for these things. 1960, Nixon versus Kennedy. On election night, Nixon is ahead. I'm not sure the amount, like 200 votes. It's one of the closest states we've ever had. And as it happens, Kennedy won the election, so this wasn't as much high drama. But Nixon was ahead. They were disputing who won the state. They certified it for Nixon. They literally certified it, just like they were doing in 2020. But the Kennedy people said, we think our guy won this state. And so what they did is they got three Kennedy electors together, and you can look up the document they signed. And they did exactly what a lot of people supposedly broke the law by doing in 2020. They said, we are the validly elected electors in the state of Hawaii, and we are casting our votes for Kennedy. They do not acknowledge there is a Nixon slate out there.
Yes.
They don't do any of that. And they say, okay, this is the real winner. And then there's lawsuits going on in the state, and they do some recounts. And in the end, they do conclude that Kennedy won the state by a few hundred votes the other way. And so they revoke the certification. The new governor revokes the certification, and he submits a new one. And Nixon himself ends up counting those electoral votes in Congress when they count the votes. And so that is the precedent we had to go off of. And when you look at what the alternative electors were doing in 2020, they mention this. They say,
yes,
we're following the precedent set by Democrats in 1960 of, we think this is a live issue. It's not 100% legally certain if we need to do this to keep our legal case alive. That's why they did this. They thought, if we don't do this, Democrats will come out and say, well, you weren't continuing your claim.
There's no electors.
You weren't insisting. There's no electors. We can only count these ones. And so they said, no, we're keeping this alive in case some lawsuits go our way. That's what they did. And then suddenly Democrats turn around and say, actually, this is a felony. And the crazy thing is, in some cases, they're saying you committed fraud, even though they release freaking press releases when they do this.
Selfie pictures.
Yeah. So
they're like all smiling together like, hey, we're the alternate electors.
Yes. They're saying, like, yeah, we met to do this. And they're coming like, you tried to defraud the people of Michigan.
Overthrow the democracy of the country.
This is an insurrection against...
But people are facing serious prison time and having their lives ruined.
They're just taking people who have never committed a crime, never been arrested before this, never done anything against their communities, and they're treating them like they're freaking...
Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah. It's deranged. And, like, do we have a photo of this Dana Nesselwoman yet? She literally looks and behaves like Dolores Umbridge, like an evil witch.
Tell people what that is. Who that is.
For those of you who aren't millennials, Dolores Umbridge is a villain in a Harry Potter book who is... if you've read it, you know the type. If you watch the movie, you know the type.
Just think of like an overly zealous hall monitor.
Yeah, overzealous hall monitor, very committed to the system, very acid-toned, and just like, well, Mr. Potter, why didn't you consider that before you signed the alternate electors?
Oh, man.
Harry Potter and the alternate electors?
Yes, that could be the eighth volume by J.K. Rowling.
Magic would explain some things that happened in 2020.
But, Rod, I know we spent a lot of time on that. You have to not give up. And, Rod, I look forward to seeing you. And we need to really ramp up promotion of this at our big event, the People's Convention. I don't know if you know or not, Rod. We're hosting our People's Convention in Detroit, Michigan, June 14, 15, 16. So we're really going to be doing a big promo push next week for that. God bless you, Rod. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
What if I told you that most of the notable diaper brands support abortion, even footing the bill for their employees to travel to have an abortion? It's one thing to reject your customers. It's another thing to support their termination. If you're a parent sickened by woke corporations supporting the destruction of American values and our most precious blessing, our children, then Meet Every Life, America's pro-life diaper brand. Finally, a baby brand that aligns with your values and is unapologetically pro-life. Every Life believes that no matter where someone is from, what they look like, planned or unplanned, every baby is a miracle worth protecting and defending. Every Life offers high-performing premium diapers and wipes created with your little ones in mind. Their diapers are made without fragrances, dyes, lotions, latex, parabens, or phthalates. It's a wonderful company. I can speak for it personally. It's amazing. Go to everylife.com for diapers and wipe bundles delivered right to your doorstep. And feel good knowing every purchase changes lives through their support of pro-life organizations and pregnancy resource centers. Every Life is changing diapers, changing lives. Learn more today at everylife.com. That is everylife.com. Use promo code Charlie for 10% off your order today. Let's go to Maureen. Maureen, thank you for being a member. What's on your mind?
Hey, Charlie and Blake. First, I was looking at Dana Nessel, and she looks more like Gollum.
Whoa!
Shots fired.
That's harsh.
But I agree.
It's the precious, but
that's exactly right.
It's like having the ability to abort your children.
What's on your mind?
Yes, and actually, that's what I'm talking about. Charlie, you were talking about an election that you thought was swayed because of IVF and yes. Some of the talk that's come out about it, about, you know, what to do with the embryos and all. And I was thinking about it. I'm actually a physician, and I was thinking about this. And I thought it's so weird that the Democrats would kind of take this up and champion it, because you have to ask, what would they do with these embryos? Would they destroy them? Would they keep them? Would they continue to grow them somehow, you know, for body parts or whatever? I think there's a lot of questions that come to mind when you talk about that particular party who celebrates abortion kind of taking this over as a fight. So I just think it's a really interesting thing, and maybe something that we could actually campaign on, you know, why do they want to be the champions of IVF, and how safe is that for people who want to have, you know, children? Will they control those embryos? Will they determine who yes. has access to them? It's very scary, and it's a slippery slope.
Yes, it is. Love the question, Maureen. And it's really smart, because these are the people that think we're overpopulated. They think there's too many human beings, and suddenly they're champions of IVF. They're not. This is naked political opportunism. That's all that this is. That this is not ideological. This is nothing that of the sort. This is naked political opportunism. Now, some people would argue, and I can see this, that an element of the Democrat Party is that they want to try to exert human will over nature. And an element of IVF is that there is a little bit of, you can like synthetically create human life outside of the natural way that God gave us. I think that's actually a pretty good argument to oppose IVF. I don't agree with it completely to oppose IVF, but that some people email me said, Charlie, you don't understand. This is a gateway to transhumanism and what Aldous Huxley wrote in Brave New World and being able to artificially grow humans. But they are not looking at this from a standpoint as they're necessarily an ideological agreement. They're just trying to capitalize on it politically. Secondly, you're right. What would the Democrats potentially do with it? Would they abuse it? Almost certainly. Blake, do you have a thought on that really quick?
You're correct. It's political opportunism. The simple truth is IVF is popular.
Yes.
And they think they can use it to really supercharge the abortion thing, which might otherwise fade a little bit because it's been more time since Dobbs. I do think there's a lot of moral issues with IVF for the reasons that are brought up. And I think they sense this is a weak point because IVF is a lot more popular among Republicans than abortion
That's
is.
That's correct.
They see it as a way to call them hypocrites, because the truth is, for most people, IVF does have this sordid element that you create a lot of embryos. Most of those things will be thrown away. So if you say life begins at conception, you do meet a lot of people who kind of, they get waffly on this.
That's
because
true.
They like babies. It's a way to emotionally exploit people to get political wins.
It might have been by mistake because of this judge, but it is an effective attack vector against the
pro-life movement. It is, and we have to be aware this danger is real, because as we said the other day, there is no value at all in just getting blown up and losing an election to pro-death ghouls.
Yes.
When you could win and get some victories.
Okay, let's get to Nick. Nick is a member. Nick, thank you for being a member. What's on your mind?
Hey, Charlie, good to be here. Big listener, listen to you every day. Yeah, I had a question. I'm thinking about all of these, all the legal battles that were had in 2020 and just how they were able to use and shut down every like pathway to understand, just understand what was going on. And is there someone or some entity out there right now wargaming to understand all the different avenues?
It's a great question. There should be, but there really isn't. And there are so many different, let's just say, lanes of attack of how the left is going to try and to try to win and to try to manipulate. Blake, you've been around for a while. Is there like this grand overarching mastermind war room?
I wish. This is where you get some of the downsides of, if you want to call it the Trump style of politics.
Decentralized.
There's a lot of upsides. It's also just winging it. Trump ran against Hillary Clinton, winged it the whole way, and it worked.
Yeah,
it worked in a incredibly in a remarkable way. But if 2016 had come down to 500 votes in one state, there would have been a lot of problems because there was not nearly as much structure for fighting out just this knife fight thing where every legal motion matters.
Like Bush v. Gore 2000.
Yeah, Bush v. Gore. And you could read stories about this in 2020 that when 2020 started shaping up that way, they're, you know, Kushner's on the phone trying to find his Bush v. Gore guy, but you can't just have that ready to go on a 5 minutes notice. You actually have to have that war room built up over time. What I will say is they're not famous, and some of them are even tied to people we don't like that much. Like there's a group that like Karl Rove is involved with, and they're challenging a lot of the sort of dumber.
Well, if they're successful,
yeah,
good for them.
Yeah, like they're doing lawsuits on the whole. Like there was one in Pennsylvania recently where Pennsylvania is trying to say, oh, actually, Merkel Elias is going around saying they don't need to date their envelopes when they send in their ballot, and if you try to make them do
it's
that, that's basically the same as Jim Crow. And a Biden appointee actually shot that down and said that was incorrect. But
that lawsuit
good.
Probably cost $700,000 to $800,000.
Yeah, and it also probably it cost money to fight that lawsuit.
But it's important,
and it will probably result in at minimum a few hundred votes that they would otherwise got. Pennsylvania could easily come down to that number of votes in a really close race, and so people are doing that sort of thing. We do need more of it, and I think it would be good to have some sort of central plan, but it would require a big level up in, frankly, the Republican Party's level of political organization.
Let's go to Lisi. Lisi, thank you for being a member. What's on your mind?
Hi, Charlie. Thank you so much. My question is, if Trump gets into office, does he plan on investigating the generals and commanding officers who participated in pulling out of the Middle East and those that knowingly made the call to leave billions of dollars worth of military equipment in enemy hands? During World War II, we had over 15 million active duty military with less than a dozen 4- and 5-star generals. And today we have less than 10% of that with over 50 4- or 5-star generals.
I believe so. I mean, I don't know specifically. Do you know, Blake? But I bet Mark Milley will not be treated very well by the next Trump administration.
I kind of hope not, but well, Mark Milley's already retired.
Yeah, he's making a ton of money.
A lot of these guys will be just gone by then, cashing in. We are ludicrously top heavy with the military. You get all these generals. There's a line in this old Greek playwright I like. The generals, they are numerous, but not good for much. And very much applies to today as well. It's a sort of general crisis in the United States, and it doesn't just apply to the military, which is if you are really calamitously wrong in how you run the country, there's not much accountability of any sort. And, you could be really extreme on this in the past. The British once shot an admiral because he lost a battle, and it was probably not justified in that case. But as Voltaire wrote, in Britain, they just shoot an admiral from time to time to encourage the others. But if we had, a lesser version of that, you can apply this to the business world as well. It used to be, until surprisingly recently, if you were a banker, if you ran an investment or like a financial company, and it went bankrupt, you were personally liable for the losses at that firm. It is a quite recent change in the laws. I think within the last 60 or 70 years, we're not talking 300 mm-hmm. years ago, that you are not personally liable for these losses. So in 2008, what if we'd said your firm can get a, you know, a bailout from the federal government, but actually all of your executives are personally liable before you can draw on that money? That would have been fair.
Yes, I agree. Sorry to cut you off, Blake. Great question. We have to get to one last one before the end of the hour. Okay. Jared, your thoughts. Thanks for being a member.
Thanks, Charlie. Really appreciate it. I had two questions, but I guess I'll ask my second one. I really liked seeing you on the Whatever podcast. I really only watch if it's you or Michael Knowles on with him.
Thank you.
But I was just curious, what was that experience like for you, and will you ever go back?
I do plan to go back. The experience was interesting. I arrived there. Blake was with me, and it's in this kind of very crammed, dormy, college, doesn't smell great apartment in Santa Barbara.
It was very wild, and they just have the windows open, and then there's, like, the police go by.
I know.
Hear it.
And then everyone's, like, dead quiet when I arrive. And I think I broke the ice over time, and I introduced myself. But, yeah, there are a lot of hurting girls there. That's the best way I could put it. These girls are – they're suffering from all the lies of modernity and hookup culture, and it's just – the experience was, I think, a good one in the sense that it was seen by millions and millions of people. I mean, that, I get that – compliment of how well we did on that more than almost anything else.
What stood out to me the most is when they just asked you about your own life, and you're
yes.
like, okay, I'm married to, you know, one woman, and I just want to be with this one woman, and this is our relationship. And they found it adorable. They loved that romantic lovey-dovey
yes.
stuff. That is, in fact, what they wanted. They would love to have that.
They don't act in that
but,
way.
And yeah, and it's just the message of this actually is available to anyone if you live your life in the way that would be conducive to creating that. And it's so sad. There's so many, you know, so much lies and crap that gets put out that, oh yeah, if you get a bunch of tattoos and get on all these trashy apps and, you know, get on OnlyFans, like that will lead to your like romantic happy ending. No.
And we have a, we're scheduling, she was not on the program with me, but she was a whatever guest, former OnlyFans model, who gave her life to Christ and has denounced all of that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so she's coming on the program, and she's a big fan of what we're doing, so it's really exciting stuff. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Get involved with Turning Point USA, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.